Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 37. This week's guest is Nicole Small. Nicole comes to talk to us about her pinhole portraits, what she gets her inspirations from. You have to excuse my coughing at the end, I have a cold. Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 37. Andrew, how are you doing?
Yes, Wade. I'm doing very well.
Awesome.
And you?
I'm good. How was your pizza and your homemade Malbec?
you know, you can't beat homemade pizza. I make a mean homemade pizza, I have to say.
Hello.
Shh, Nicole, be quiet. We introduce you in a minute.
Oh, sorry.
Shh. Right. Yeah, so have you had a good week? Curry.
I've had a tiring week. I'm in the middle of like fighting a cold. I'm kind of like, kind of have it, kind of don't. It goes away, and then one day it comes back, you know, just kind of like a head sinus thing. But we have temperatures ranging from, 23 degrees in the morning to 65 or 70 in the afternoon, you know, so it's kind of out of control here. But other than that, yeah, I'm happy.
Do you take vitamin pills?
I don't take any vitamin pills. I just eat my vegetables.
Oh, do you? Yeah. It's easier to take a pill.
Yeah, I know, but it doesn't taste as good.
Well, I've had a good day. Apart from work, which is never a good day, at lunchtime I walked over to our churchyard, which is handily placed across the road, and I experimented with a 3D printed 35mm camera that was... One was given to me by Graham from the Homemade Camera Podcast, and one was given to you, so I don't know how you're getting on, but I shot some self-portraits, which is very apt with our guest, who we'll chat to in a minute, but some self-portraits hanging around gravestones. So I had this idea that I could get the gravestone in sharp focus and then have ghostly images of me staring down at the grave like I was some kind of creature from beyond the grave. That sounds good. But it
sounds
was
awesome.
So this little camera this makes square images on 35mm film, so I'm led to believe.
It does.
But I need to feed back to Graham some of the user faults that are with it. Graham,
yeah, me, I do too.
I couldn't get it to sit on a tripod because the tripod thread is not deep enough. So come on, Graham, get your act together. What's wrong with you?
In all fairness, we're supposed to be giving him information back, you know, so we have.
Yeah. No, well, I do now have some practical in the field.
I do. Feedback. I have some too. I've shot some with mine. I've gotten probably halfway through my roll. So at least
you can't really tell, can you? That's the other thing. You can't really tell. And he said to wind it on half a turn, but I've been winding on a bit more than that just to be sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So our guest this week is someone that I've been following on Instagram for a while. I really enjoy her photography. She does self-portraits, and she 4x5, 5x7, she does some digital stuff too. But we have with us today, Nicole Small. You'll know her as One-on-One Portraits on Instagram. Is that right, Nicole?
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. How is everything going up in, you're in Montreal, I believe. And that,
yes, I'm in Montreal. It's wet, rainy, actually mild, which is kind of nice for a change. But,
sure.
It's winter.
It's winter. Andrew can't. Andrew, it's always winter for Andrew where he lives, so he doesn't really know about this.
No, we've had some quite mild weather recently.
Oh, you guys had a hot summer too, didn't you?
It was scorching, yeah.
Sunshiny hot summer. But
just waiting for the snow now, but we don't get as much snow as you guys in Canada.
Yeah.
We've been good so far, so let's hope it stays as
good. Yeah, sure. Yeah. So you've been, I was talking to you earlier, Nicole, and you were mentioning that you were in a show this weekend showcasing some of your pinhole portraits, I believe. Have you... Mm-hmm. How long have you been doing pinhole photography? Not necessarily into portraits, but how long have you been kind of messing around with pinhole in general?
It's actually, I started the first time was probably in 20, I would say 12. I experimented with it. And to tell you the truth, I didn't really like it at that time. And then, you know, I was mostly working with digital at that time, and I kind of got bored and I just wanted to try something different. And then I kind of said, let me try the pinhole again. And then I just kind of just got back into it, and I just became obsessed with it. And I just kind of started doing my own thing. A lot of experimentation before I actually really started to show stuff online. You know, all the what ifs was what I was actually playing around with. What if I did this? What if I did that? And then until I kind of got, you know, my own way of knowing that, okay, if I want to have this, it to look this way, I was able to do it by all the 24/7 trial and errors experience.
Sure. Did you come directly to portraits, or did you kind of do others?
I've always loved portraits. I started in fashion in the very, very beginning, and I didn't like it. It was just too superficial for me. And then when I started kind of branching out on my own and kind of saying, okay, this is, you know, what I really wanted to do, it was portraits. I like when the faces are really close to the viewer. That's my style.
Yeah, you fill the frame like for sure with what you're taking a picture of.
Yeah,
Nicole, I mean, it has to be said, some people can get away with it more than others.
Okay.
So yours are fine. You'll be pleased to know. I've done some portraits of folk recently, and they've not been very flattering, I have to say.
Yeah, I was going to say, but Andrew has a face for radio. That's why he's saying that. You know,
I wouldn't dare splash my Instagram feed with self-portraits like that.
Yeah, that's what I liked about when I first started seeing some of your work was I really liked the portrait side of it, but I liked how faces were just moved, you know. I mean, you could tell that that there it was a long exposure, you know, but they were just different. So that's why I've always enjoy seeing the portraits that you do. Yeah.
Nicole, is the exhibition that you're showing at the moment, is this the one on your website called ODD, and then it's in French about bizarre art?
Oh, that actually one.
Oh,
that
wow,
was last
you've had one
week.
Last week.
Yeah, yeah, that was
an exhibition
weekend.
of bizarre art in French.
Yeah, which was pretty exciting, actually. I think it's one of the first exhibits that really suited my work. Everything was kind of, you know, odd. A lot of the other shows that I've done, I mean, I really was like the, you know, like a sore thumb. Like everything was kind of very neat, and mine was the only one that was really weird. So it was kind of nice to be in a show where, you know, everything complemented each other. So it was really.
Were you showing
nice.
Your pinhole work or lens based work?
Yes, yeah, it was my pinhole work. Yeah.
How many pinhole work images were you showing?
Well, at this show, there was only really one main piece. From each artist that was there, they had one main piece, and then we got to kind of like, you know, talk to other people that came to the show and stuff like that. So it was really the first time they've actually done a show. This particular group, Sound Central, was hosted by Sound Central. And it was the first show that they did. So it was very small, but I think one of the most, the perfect venue for my work from what I've done so far. So
wow, well done.
Print, which is kind of cool. Yeah, my first print, so it worked out well, you know, for me. But I really felt a positive vibe because I just knew that it was just so suitable for the type of work. That,
have you ever displayed your images at any of these exhibitions when you've had the opportunity to display more than one in the same way that you do on your website? Because if folks go to oneononeart.com and go to your...
I had my own personal... in May, actually, I had my own show with all of my work, mostly all of it. That went really well. There was a good turnout. I was actually kind of surprised because I don't find I got much feedback really here at home. I get a lot more feedback outside, So when I had the show, it was really nerve-wracking because I was, oh gosh, I don't know if this is going to work. I don't know if people are going to come and see it. And it actually was a very, very good
turnout. How did you go about organizing that, Nicole? Were you approached or did you know the venue? Do you have history with the venue?
I knew the venue in a sense that it's a venue that only deals with film. And like they sell old film cameras and they sell expired film and all that kind of stuff. So I kind of knew of the venue. And so I just asked the gentleman, because he does do exhibits for local artists. And so that's where I went. And then I just had my show.
Oh, that worked out great.
I love the way you display, you know, there's a whole argument about how you display images. But I think the way you've got yours on your website with these sort of 12 in a matrix, I just think it works really well, just seeing them all together. I'm sure they'd all work separately as well, but just seeing them all together, I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's the first time I actually really saw it that way was at my actual show. You know, when you're kind of, you know, you have it online and I kind of just see it like as an individual piece. But then when I saw it at my own show, I was like, oh my God, they look good together. You know, you're so focused on one thing at a time that when I put them all together, I was just like, oh wow, you know,
makes a cohesive body.
It's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Yes.
These ones I'm looking at are from the Black History Month, which I don't know what month that was, but it was sometime in the year, February.
Yeah, I was going to say it's February.
And did you pull these images together from shots that you'd had on file, or did you go out and shoot any of these with Black History Month in mind?
Yes, this was with Black History Month in mind.
Because, I mean, I don't... Some of the ones where you have the, I guess it's light play. Is it light playing on your face or is it actually markings on your face? I can't tell.
I couldn't tell either.
Oh, it's actually Halloween. Is it?
Oh, what, glow in the dark stuff?
Yeah.
Is it?
No, it's just white. White. I just put lines on my face, and to tell you the truth, I made them very, very thin. And for some reason, the lines came out really, really thick because I really did it very fine. But in the end, they
I mean, is that a sort of reference a visual reference to tribal markings?
More tribal. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So they really came out much thicker than I wanted, but I think it worked just the same.
Yeah.
And the headscarf as well. I mean, that's I think they're wonderful.
So do you have many people that you photograph in Montreal, or do you just kind of do yourself and self-portraits, you know? I mean, do you do digital stuff with, do you have a portrait studio or anything, or
I used to have a studio, but I don't have it anymore. It's very, you know, doing the pinhole, it's very, I guess, very particular, and it's not something that everybody would necessarily want. And so it's very, very hard to market, you know? And so what I started to do them, I started to think, well, why don't I do them as events where people could walk in and kind of experience it. And then maybe, you know, I was thinking from there, it can maybe grow into something where people might want to come and actually, you know, request it. But it's not for everybody. It's a very, very particular, you know, group that I think would actually, you know, want this type of look. So I had a few experiences in Ottawa, for example. I did a few events there, which worked out well. Here, not so much. I had a few where people, like, I think I had one person show up at one, and then nobody showed up at another. So it's very heart-wrenching, but you know, I was driven to keep going. And so at this point I kind of took a break, kind of to see how I can maybe, you know, have this propel bigger than what it has been.
Right.
Where were you having those I want to call them exhibitions, but those events, were they in your studio space when you had a studio space?
No, actually, it wasn't in the studio space. It was actually, one was at actually a hostel. It's a hostel that actually hosts local artists.
Oh, that sounds cool.
And through doing a lot of research, I ended up finding them and just reading. And they so happen to have, we're open for Montreal, artists and stuff. And so I contacted them, and that's how I got my foot in there. It's a lot of research, to find out. And I didn't know if they would really like the kind of work, but they actually did. So, but only one person showed up. that's how it is. Everything starts out slow, I guess, and I guess the awareness of, this type of style, it's not, you don't see it everywhere. So, I think people will most likely fall into it by chance.
Well, pinhole portraits aren't the common form of image we see online. There was who's the other guy we were going to get on the show who hasn't made it yet? Stefan_NY. He does pinhole portraits, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Oh yes. I follow his work actually. Yeah, he has.
And yours are all unlike my sad efforts. Yours are all presumably yours are on tripods. Don't laugh. Yours are on tripods with you using some artificial lighting, or is it sort of natural light with some reflectors?
Oh, no, I have to use artificial light. Number one, I was using hot lights with these, to believe it or not. All of these were done with hot lights that were probably about maybe a foot and a half away from me.
Are you using LEDs? Because the LEDs, you can use LEDs now, can't you? And they're not so hot.
But at the when I started doing this, I had hot lights already, 300 watts, and so
I thought you looked a bit sweating in some of these.
Exactly, in some of them when I was trying out, you would see sweat coming down my, stuff like that. But I was determined to do it, so I kind of got a few burns, but I was just loving it so much that I kept going, and then only recently. Maybe about 6 months ago, I decided to get into the LEDs. And it's much more.
And how are you, to get the lighting effect that you want, are you enlisting a friend to sit there in your space, or are you watching yourself in a mirror, or, could you?
There's no, because what I did with my testing is that I have a dummy. I have a dummy head. And so the pinhole that I use, it's equivalent to a 50 on a 35. So how I kind of got my compositions was I took my 50 on my 35 and I used the dummy and kind of positioned, the composition of it all and how wide and how close. And then I would place my pinhole there and I'd mark the knowing where I need to stand.
And I suppose once you've done a few and you start getting the results, you then know, don't you?
Yeah. Then I kind of know my distance and everything. But, the issue is the further I go away, the longer my time is. And also because, my skin is dark, I have to increase the time even more, especially when I'm working with paper. So
What do you like to use? Are you using larger format film or paper? So do you have a paper that you like to use, a graded paper? Because Andrew's all into.
I use the Pearl paper. I use Ilford's Pearl paper when I work with paper, and I prefer the paper because of the look that I get. It's just for more G and more, dark. But then again, I'm dealing with longer times. I also use film from time to time, and it's just a different look altogether. But
and this is an 8. Is this an 8x10 pinhole camera, Nicole?
I have an 8x10, which my very first few pinhole shots, I use the 8x10, but my times are very long. It's a mental preparation.
Are you talking about 10, 15 minutes?
Especially when I was using hot lights. Actually, I ended up buying more lights. So you know, when I started, it was between 6 and 8 minutes, my exposure times. And then I actually got a work light that I added into the mix, and that kind of brought it down. And then I eventually stopped using the 8x10, and I started using the 4x5, which brought me down to about 3.5 minutes. So there's a
big difference. Is that a commercially bought camera, Nicole, or something you've made?
My 5x7 is made, and the 4x5 was actually bought off of Etsy. He's a local photographer here who used to build and make them. He doesn't make them anymore, but that's where I bought it from. So it's actually, you know, it's handmade by a local photographer here.
I'm not at all sure. Oh, I think Ondu make a 5x7, don't they, Curry? But
I have an Ondu 5x7.
I know, yeah, that's one. When I said it, I suddenly remembered you had that.
Yeah.
I just got foam core, and I just said I want to build a bigger one. I wanted the paper with the 4x5 is nice, but I wanted it bigger. And the 8x10 was just too long of a time, so I built my 5x7.
There you go. Yeah. Foam core board seems to be a material of preference for a lot of people. A lot of cameras have been made out of that.
It's just not good when you go out in the weather, though. Like, if it's damp or, you know, it's the only problem. I remember I went out on a very, very hot summer day, and the tape
started
to kind of melt a little bit. And then, you know, started going a little crooked. I'm like, oh, my God, you know, what am I going to do? So, yeah, that's the only issue, you know, with the foam core.
So, Nicole, you have a collection called Mysteriously Raw, and that title intrigued me. It's always interesting when someone titles a body of work, because it's encouraging me to think in a particular way. It may encourage others to think in other ways, but clearly I think when an artist uses a title, they probably have something in mind, because the alternative is to give it no title and leave it completely up to the viewer. So as you've given it a title, what was the thinking behind Mysteriously Raw?
Number one, they're mysterious, as you can see. But the reason I put Mysteriously Raw is because they're not photoshopped. It's a one shot deal. That's what it is. There's no manipulation, and so that's why I call it.
It's almost like using raw in the sense that digital photographers would understand it. You know, in terms of,
I guess,
you know, the
capturing a raw,
capturing the raw data.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, the first thing people think when they see anything is it photoshopped? So that was kind of in my mind. And then I'm like, oh, no, I'm just going to say Mysteriously Raw. So these are exactly as they are.
Because I think there was one on your, probably on Instagram. You've been posting some things. If folks want to look on Nicole's Instagram page, she's been posting some of her favorites just in the last day or two. And I've been commenting on a few. And I think I confused you a bit when there was a portrait of you with butterflies over your eyes and your mouth. And I made the comment alive or dead. I didn't mean you. I meant the butterflies.
Oh, no. I was kind of like going along with the joke, like are they alive or dead? You know, that's kind of what I meant by it.
Well, yeah, because I mean, that's that particular image that you posted on Instagram with the butterflies over your eyes. It actually, and you do actually appear quite corpse-like in that image, and I think what it is, when folks used to die, they used to place the coins on their eyelids, didn't they? And you know what? That's what that reminded me of. And it may not be at all what you thought of, but that's how it struck me. You're clearly not dead because you're talking to us.
Thank goodness. So,
are these little props, these butterflies, or did you Photoshop them on?
Did you capture them freshly?
Yeah.
And did you stick pins through them?
Yeah.
It's tape. Just tape them on my eyes and tape them on my mouth. Yeah. Yep.
Did you shellac the butterflies once you captured them so they froze, or did you?
I have a whole slew of these guys. Yeah.
Awesome.
And these are all against most of these portraits are against a plain black background. Is that just a cloth you're draping up, or is it a solid paper background?
Yes. Yeah, it's just a cloth. It's just a cloth. Yeah.
Yeah, that's when I got the Ondu, the 5x7, I was actually trying some portraits, and when I saw yours, I was like, oh, I forgot all about having to get a backdrop, because it's kind of wide. So I was like, I've got to figure out some way to, like, you know, work this out. So, like, I started putting the backdrop, and, like, I had to bring the camera closer and closer, and finally it was literally, like, almost touching my nose, you know.
Well, Nicole isn't getting that distortion because you like the really short focal length ones. Where Nicole's camera is set up like a 50mm camera. That's isn't it, Nicole?
It's probably three feet away from your arm's length, maybe.
Yeah, it's about arm's length. Yep.
Oh, I like to do that, but I'm going to have to make something, you know, with a much longer focal length because everything I have, is wide.
It's okay if you want unflattering images like the ones I take of people, but if you want something with a
real art,
indeed. So, Nicole, why film? That's my first question, because I know you've toyed with digital, but what is it? Did you start off with film and then got drawn to the dark side
digital? I started off in digital. I was working with digital. And then one day I just got bored of it. I'm like, I want something that, you know, gives me something back. And so just like that, I said, you know what, this film still exists. And I just started doing a lot of research. I just started reading up on all different things. And I realized, oh, you could still buy a camera to work with film. And I didn't know that at the time. And so I remember asking a friend of mine, and he and I asked him, hey, you know, where can I get a film camera? And he goes, go on Kijiji, you know, go on a classified site. You know, people are always selling them. They're selling them for cheap. So I said, okay.
Excuse me.
So I went and I bought one. It was actually a Minolta that I bought, a whole kit with a whole bunch of lenses and different things. And I started experimenting with that. And then second stage came to processing my own film, because there again I had no idea you could process your own film. I went to YouTube and came across a video where someone was saying processing their own film, and I'm like, you can do it at home. Room, I was thinking, okay, it's a special room, you know, like a special dark room. But then when I saw the gentleman doing it in his bathroom, I was like, well, I can do that. And then I just started, you know, going over all different YouTube videos, how they process. And then I said, okay, the next roll, I'm going to do it myself. And then that's how it started. And the first time I did it, I'm like, I love it. And then it, you know.
I think I still get that sense of wonder, and I still, the excitement of shaking those spirals and then holding it up to the light.
Sure.
But I do envy people like you, Nicole, who started off with digital and then discovered as an adult, this kind of other way of seeing images. Because when I did it for the first time back in the dark ages, it was just the norm, you know. I mean, everyone used film. There was no digital. It was great to see the negatives, but you know, every time you sent your film away in the post, you got negatives back. So you were kind of familiar with them. But you know, that was just 35mm, 120, and then moving up to large format. Then, when I developed 5x4 negs, I still get blown away by those.
Yeah,
yeah.
8x10 is even bigger than that, because I have those X-ray film that I do. Wow. And when you get done doing that, you hold it up, it's as big as a sheet of paper. You know what I mean? It's like, holy cow, man!
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it's. Wow. And I remember back before digital, when I was younger and I was shooting film, you know, like large format was so exotic, you know what I mean? It was like 8x10 or 4x5 and 5x7. You had to like have a vest that you know what I mean? You had to, it's like one of those things that's just untouchable, kind of, you know. Now it's like not even second thought. We all seem to be doing it, you know.
So self portraits, that's bring you kicking and screaming back to that. So what is it about exploring images of the self that really that you're really trying to explore, or is it just because you're a handy model?
To tell you, I think it's, you know, when there's a, like, I originally wanted to do a lot of conceptual work before I actually got into the self-portrait stuff. And it's very hard to find people to do projects with.
Yep.
And so, you know, I said, well, you know, let me see. Let me just try to do one of these ideas. And I tried it. I'm like, hey, it's not so bad. And then kind of tried something else and then tried something else. And then I'm like, well, you know what? I can do them, you know, on my own. I don't necessarily need to hunt for someone to do them. So I just kind of went through my big black book of all my sketches, and I slowly just started to piece out some of my conceptual ideas, and then I created individual self-portraits from them. And that's how this kind of just exploded into these, you know, the variety of images that I have. So they're all kind of coming from an actual idea that I had of doing with someone else, not with myself. And so the only way I was able to continue to do what I love so much, I started to do them as self-portraits. And it's just become part of something that I really love doing. And, you know, those times where, you know, trying to find someone, I don't know how you guys feel, but I need to create. And when I don't have that time to do so, I get in a bad mood, maybe, if you can say, like, I'm just like, itching, like I have to. Something I can't take this anymore. It's been like, you know, a week, and then I just said I can't go through that anymore. So I started to involve myself in my own ideas, and then I just started creating them.
I get darkroom withdrawal. That's my problem.
Excuse me.
Bless you.
Thanks. Sorry, if I cough, I'm sorry. I'm gonna.
So Nicole, do you have a day job that doesn't involve photography? And is this your outlet, or are you able to make some kind of living out of this?
I actually work in a hospital. I work in a hospital, to tell you the truth.
Really?
Yeah, I work in a hospital, and it has nothing to do with what I has nothing to do with my real true passion. It's just helps pay the bills and helps me be able to get my materials. So to continue doing what I love to do.
Don't
so
feel bad. Really... My day job has nothing to do with being creative either. So.
Oh, it does. You're making things with your hands.
Yeah, I guess I am kind of. Yeah. So it's, I could definitely take a step back and see something tangible that I actually made, you know, but it's what other people want. I mean, I'm building other things that other people want, basically. It's not really like, you know,
did you go to art school at all? Because you mentioned drawing, Nicole. So I'm assuming if I try to do conceptual sketches of anybody, they'd look like stick men.
Badly drawn stick men.
If I was to show you some, you would probably laugh because I can't draw. I cannot draw.
I can't either.
I just mimic it as best as I can. And if they're stick people, they're stick people. You know?
Right.
But I have a lot of notes written to beside everything. Okay, well, this is supposed to be, you know, like, let's say a flower. And I kind of have a little description because I can't draw. I can't draw for beans.
I thought you were going to tell me you're an art school dropout, but you're not.
No.
I wouldn't be surprised if you had told me that. I was, I don't know whether it was last week or the week before, we were talking about self-portraits, and I'd mentioned an exhibition I'd been to in Liverpool, and because I wasn't prepared, I'd forgotten the name of
the show.
Yeah. I remembered Francesca Woodman, and I mentioned Francesca Woodman either last week or the week before, and she explored, all her work is pretty much self-portraits. If you don't know the work of Francesca Woodman, Nicole, or anyone else listening, really check it out. She died quite young. I think she took her own life, but she explored the idea of self body image. So it was whole, through movement and blur, really. I don't think she ever used pinhole. Did she? No, I don't think so. But I've got a whole biography of her with her images, and I haven't read it yet. I bought it on the second-hand market. But her work was being exhibited alongside a German, Egon. Now, I don't know how to pronounce his surname. It's spelled S-C-H-I-E-L-E, so I'm going to say Scheele. And he was early 20th century, and he was obviously, he wasn't a photographer, but he did paintings of himself, but very twisted ideas of I think, how he saw himself. So, you know, there were not sort of lifelike, shall we say. And by exhibiting these two artists side by side, it was one of the most powerful exhibitions I'd been to, and that was in Liverpool earlier this year. But that's really why I was sort of asking you about your motivations behind self-portraits, because I think after going to the, I think that's the beauty of going to exhibitions and reading books, it just gets you thinking, doesn't it?
Yeah. What was behind the mind when, you know, all of that was going on?
Well, you read little bits. I read in the exhibition of Francesca Woodman, she was, you know, at times she was clearly troubled, you know, and the photography was both with an outlet for her, and and you know, she was a beautiful lady, and that she had likely had issues of, you know, low self-esteem and things, and it's such a tragedy that she cut her life short. But it was a very, very powerful time. I'd recommend the work of Francesca Woodman, and go online and look at Egon Schiele's work as well.
Oh, I'm gonna do that.
And sure. When did you get into alternative processes? And I'm not going to mention salt prints at all.
No, go ahead. It's okay.
I think that was around 20, maybe 2013 or 14. Mm-hmm. I actually started out with cyanotypes. Yep.
Oh, I want to do those so bad. That's what I
started off with. Yeah. Again, it was looking for something different to do and try. And going through YouTube, just discovered these different things. And I said, oh, I'll try the cyanotype, which I really
think it's one of the most easiest forms to get into. That doesn't involve a lot of expense. Yes. I mean, you can buy a kit, but the
chemicals and everything.
The chemicals are quite cheap, yeah. Corey. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need to buy, like, shed loads of silver nitrate at, you know, 100 box of bottles.
Yeah. I have a lot of sun here, too, so that works to my favor. And it's really bright.
For me, it's kind of seasonal when I work with the type.
Excuse me.
I don't have like my own UV machine or anything, but it's very much only in the summer months that I'll do it. You know, and that's it's kind of okay because it kind of you know, just breaks me up a little bit. So then when I'm coming back to, you know, the pinhole or the film, I'm kind of refreshed from something else. So I kind of like that. It just breaks up. That I'm not going into the same thing all the time, which is something that I really, really, really dislike having to find myself doing the same thing for years, like over and over and over and over again. I'm that kind of person that I need to change.
I think having done years of darkroom work, discovering some alternative processes it gives you a new incentive. It gives you a new reason to go out and shoot and start your mind thinking along different types of images, because some are better suited than others. These aren't pinhole portraits, are they, Nicole?
No, they're not pinhole, but I mean it's you know, it's an outlet.
That's okay. But are they your Minolta? Were these derived from your Minolta or large are they large format film?
Oh no, it's Minolta. I was done with my Minolta, yeah. was my Minolta camera. Some of them were digital. The very first few cyanotypes that did were with digital, because, you know, it was new for me, and I thought, oh, I'll play it safe and just, you know, work with them digitally and just see how it will work out. I mean, in the end, it's really the negative, how good your negative is. So, I mean, I was able to kind of help myself by tweaking it in Photoshop and kind of understanding, know how to make it come out at its best.
Are you printing it out onto? Are these how big are the final prints, Nicole? Are you printing this out on acetate on the printer?
My acetate, they're like 8x10. I have 8x10s, or I have 12x16.
Yeah,
like I made really big ones as well.
Yeah.
So you're scanning your negative, and you're trying to optimize it in Photoshop to give you, you know, presumably a fairly contrasty negative that you print out on acetate.
Yes, because I like my cyanotypes, I like my blues to be very blue. So there is, you know, when I'm coming to the you know, fixing my negative, but I make sure, you know, have it in the sun, that it comes out really like a navy blue, like a really dark blue.
Yeah, because you get a bit of a change when you inspect it. Then once you put it in the water bath, it changes, doesn't it? I forget. Does it lighten up a bit?
Yes, it lightens up. Yeah. So I kind of like overdo it a little bit. I just go a little bit beyond the actual time that you should actually remove it from the sun. And I just let it, you know, soak in a little bit more. And then I put it in the water so that I get this deep, deep blue. That's how I like my cyanotypes.
I'm looking at the gallery called Cyanotype 1, I think. And I love the way, I didn't notice this on your other ones. Maybe it was as I move my mouse over. The image is sort of ghosting out, and then the title comes up like, "I know you feel it too," and nostalgia, and I think that's, I love that. That's great. Lust.
Yeah.
Because that's interesting. You're looking straight at me there with lust. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. So,
should we change the subject quickly?
Maybe I need to jump in here
before I get myself in too much trouble. But your later work, so Cyanotype 2 is a bit more, I wouldn't say formal, but it's more, it's not so, yeah, standard. That's probably the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
More standard portraits, aren't they?
Yeah. This was something else that I tried to kind of, I wanted to, you know, offer it as something people could have. And so a lot of them are friends that I knew. And then I said, you know, I just want to try something out. And then, you know, I just kind of came up with these portraits. So some of them were really not actually meant to be a cyanotype, but I tried it in any way. And some of them came out really,
so
really
nice. So your friends said, okay, let's just try it. And they just did whatever you came up with.
Yeah. Some I have. Really cool. It's, hey, I want to try something out. Do you mind, you know, just sitting in for me? And it worked out, you know. Cool. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
And then the last one in there is lumen prints, which aren't that. Now, that confused me because I thought a lumen print was one of those early processes where you just lay like a feather on a piece of sensitized paper and shove it under the light like a sun print. But
Yeah, this was actually quite an interesting. There was a gentleman on Instagram, Jordan Otero, and I found his I don't know how I came. There was an image that I saw, and then I clicked on his profile, and so I was looking throughout his images, and he had this little 6x6 box, and he was mentioning how he created these images with them. So I'm like, oh. Well, that's kind of neat. And how does it work? So, I mean, I was thinking, okay, it must be like a pinhole camera, but it's just very small. So I just contacted him and I asked him about it. And he just basically told me that, you know, it's a very long process, mind you. it takes like, these were like an hour to 2 hours of exposure. This was done on my balcony. I had experimented with them before, but I always liked to do it when it was like an overcast day because the light was nice and even. There were a few that I did in bright sun, and they were about an hour and a half to 2 hour of exposure. But you don't use any chemicals at all. You just scan it, and then you invert it, and that's
so it's
your
like
image.
It's like when you're putting your paper inside a beer can and exposing it as like a solograph, But this is much more distinct than a solograph. So, does the camera have a lens in it then, or because it?
Yes, it has like a little lens. It's like I guess you would say from like a magnifying glass. Okay. It looks just like that. It's big, and then I guess he determines the size of it. Like it was I think this was an F8 or an F5.6. And then from there, he kind of, I guess, from his tests and everything, he determines the approximate time in bright sun, if you're, you know, in a cloudy situation, or even if you're indoors. And I guess from doing all of those tests, because you get like this graph that comes along with it. And then, mind you, his images are not like mine. His are very much like in an open space, and it's just very wide angle. And I just wanted to do them more as still lifes. This was really an experimentation. And the first one I did, I really liked it. And I just kind of kept on doing it. But the sun has to be, the weather has to be just right.
Are you using the Ilford paper again, or is it some different type of paper?
Ilford paper. And actually, if you have expired paper, it works even better.
Wow.
you get
caught. So you're not developing this. Sorry, I'm just trying to get my head around it. You're not developing this. You're just, ending up with a paper negative, which you're then inverting.
You wet the paper, actually. I forgot. You wet the paper.
This is even more bizarre now.
And then that's all it is. You expose it, and then you just stamp.
So what's the difference between the times for the lumen prints versus the cyanotypes? Just depend. I mean, does you need more UV? You need more UV for the cyanotypes, right?
Well, I only do them out in the sun during the summer months, and it's about three. I usually my time is about 3 to 3.5 minutes. That's how much I usually do it
for the cyanotypes.
And for the cyanotypes, right.
Depends on your sun, though, doesn't it? And all sorts of variables.
Yeah.
Exactly. Which is why people use the UV boxes or the UV lights. I have a little UV bulb that I use.
Yeah, so you're getting, you know, exactly the time that you need. So, but I usually wait when I know that it's a really sunny day, there's no clouds. My time is 3 to 3.5 minutes.
I always thought that the lumen prints were illuminated salt prints.
Well, if you Google, see, I'm pretending to be really knowledgeable, but I did a quick Google before we start. And they... They are. Basically, they are. Yeah, they're sensitized paper. Traditionally, a lumen print would be sensitized paper, light silver nitrate, salt prints, with items placed over them. It's
sure.
Very, but yes. This is a camera that this artist, I don't know how you pronounce his name, it's spelled Jotterman, Jotterman. Yeah. And we'll, Corey, if you get the gent's details, the artist's details from Nicole's website, you can
okay.
put them in the show notes.
And
for those looking for show notes, because one or two people on the Lensless podcast Facebook group was asking about some references to something we spoke about last week, and I double checked, and the link was on. I know it was Moni's postcard swap, I think, or Git swap, one of those two. And folks, if you go to the Anchor site where the podcast originates, then that's where the show notes are. Maybe Corey could cut and paste them into the Facebook group, because that's where people tend to go.
Yeah, I should be able to. I'll try that today.
Maybe you should do that. But if you put
is that a healthy suggestion?
Yeah. No, I think it would be welcomed by the 451 members we have on the Lensless
Fine.
Podcast Facebook group.
Yeah. Okay.
So this he has an Instagram account, does he, Nicole? This Jotterman.
Yep. Yes, he does. Yes, he does. And I can send you that link.
I should be looking him up
for sure.
And does he sell these cameras, or did you just talk nicely to him and he didn't?
Oh no, he sells these cameras. Right. He sells them.
I better not go
there. Then. Here we go, Andrew.
Get him on the show. Get him on the show.
You should have him. It's okay. Pretty interesting how he's done all of this stuff. And I actually, I want it bigger though, but the problem is the time. It's just so long, you know, because again, my idea when I discovered this and I tried my little trials with the still life, I wanted to do portraits, but then it's just...
You'll need one of those neck clamps that the Victorians used.
Yeah, so you can just sit back.
Yeah. Yeah, so, but I mean, I was just thinking in my head, oh my God, what would it look like, you know, as a portrait being done this way? But it's just too long of a time. It's just too long. Mm.
So what's next for you, Nicole? Your list of exhibitions is...
Impressive.
Yeah, and publications. So I noticed exhibitions. What? So most of these here, exhibition. I've lost it. There we go. So over a fairly short, these exhibitions start in 2016. You must have a dozen or so on there. Most of them Montreal?
Yeah. Yes, most of them are Montreal.
So
yeah.
You've shown your cyanotypes, your mysteriously raw little cafes. Are you, these are all venues, because they're all different venues, I think, many cafes. Are you approaching these cafes, or do these cafes have a history of displaying artists' work?
They have a history of showing work, but I found them through research, researching online. And a good friend of mine also, who kind of always looks out for stuff, he also kind of says, hey, I think I saw this cafe. They had paintings on the wall. Maybe it's something, you know, and then, you know, I just try and I reach out to them and see what they say.
Right.
And sometimes it's a yes, sometimes it's a no.
But, do you go and see them and take along? I'm just thinking for folks out there who want to do something similar. Do you take some, you know, a small selection of work along and show them? Say, look, this is the stuff I do. Can I display it, or do you just sort of email them?
Well, usually I'll contact them by email, and then if I get a response, then okay, then I'll make a trip down, introduce myself, and then I'll maybe bring a few pieces just for them to see it as a
product. Yeah, I mean you can link them to your website, can't you? So that's kind of your portfolio, isn't it?
Really? Yeah. And then that's usually how I do it. And then most of the time so far it's been a yes, but you got to find the right places, of course. You know, I mean, my images are kind of dark, so there's not every place that it'll actually be suitable. Even if they're just putting up, they have pictures on the wall, not actually suitable for their venue. So,
yeah. But you never know unless you ask.
That's it. You know, you always take. You know, sometimes I'm like, I don't think so, and then it's like, oh, really? Yes. Right. And then you know, so you take the chance. You know, you just take.
I think it's a good. You know, if people want to get their work shown, then approaching a local cafe is always a good bet. And I think if you live in a city, you've got more choice. You know, I live in a reasonably large village, but you know, we have a tea shop and selling tea and cakes. I don't know. They might. I think I'd have to have a local interest. Maybe some salt prints from the fens. I'll approach them with that.
Well, what you need to do is get a couple friends and go in there and ask them. Be like, hey, why don't you guys have art? There's this guy who does this art. He's really good.
When I stop work, I'll put a bit more effort into it.
There you go.
I don't know, but I think the closest I came when we had the World Pinhole Day meetup in Norwich last year. Alex Yates. Organized. We all submitted a print to him. I sent a proper darkroom print. Others did digital files, and Alex made the prints. And we mounted them all on foam core, and he arranged with a cafe in Norwich to have an exhibition during World Pinhole Week.
That was brilliant.
And he he hung these. They were hung in the cafe in a jaunty fashion on string and clothes pegs. And it was really effective. It was nice to see. I'd never seen any of my images on a wall before. Well, it was just the one, but it was lovely to see. And it was a great thing to do. So if there's a group of you, you know, if there's a group of you interested, I think approaching, there's less pressure if there's a group of you. If there's a, you know, you can approach a cafe as a group of people and say, well, you know, we shoot film and we make some nice images. Can we display?
Yeah, there you go.
Have you ever done anything like that, Corey? Have you ever approached any local places to see if they'd show your work?
I have. And most of them said they look great, but they say they're a little bit out of focus.
Yeah.
they sure are.
They didn't say they're a bit gimmicky.
No. And that's when I just say, I'll have a croissant and a cup of coffee, thanks, you know, and then I just leave.
Little bit. It's the beauty of, you know, the pinhole. The fact that it isn't actually tack sharp.
You've got to educate them first, Corey.
So you're not alone.
I'll rephrase that. I have no luck in my town or area of trying to start up a pinhole photography group or, you know, photo walks. I mean, like, it's just one of those things. Just not happening here. I don't know why. It just isn't. Luckily.
Yeah. It's not easy.
The podcast do what, and, Nicole?
I tried to have a workshop at one point earlier when I was kind of really, you know, focused on, you know, the pinhole work, but no interest really.
Yeah.
Are you in contact with other pinhole photographers in Canada or Montreal?
Actually, I had contacted a gentleman who was very much, you know, that's what he was known to do, but he never actually replied back to me. So I was kind of like bummed out about that. I was just asking for information, like, you know, if he could help me kind of build, help me build the workshop. Like, what can I do at the workshop, or what steps would I need to take to make it successful? And I never got a reply from him. So I was a little bit kind of disappointed about that, but I went for it anyway. I mean, I even went as far as contacting Ilford to see if they could supply some materials.
Wow.
I actually, by mistake, I had contacted the branch in Europe, and they replied to me.
Oh, wow.
And they said, "Oh, you know, fantastic! It's great that you know you're still you know using this stuff and all that." And then they said, "Well, I'll give you the information, you know, the contact person to contact in the Canada branch." It's like, "Oh, great! This is cool." So I contact them and I get no reply.
Wow.
So, okay, I wait a week, you know, I'll give myself a week and then I'll contact them again and I got no response.
Well, I think Ilford were using, I mean, there's Ilford in Moberly in Cheshire, that's where their factory is, and then they'll, you know, they'll distribute from there. But I think in other parts of the world, they have official distributors because when I was in, when I was in Atlanta last year, I went in, there's a mum and pop's camera store there called Wings Camera in Atlanta, and they just lost their Ilford rep or their Ilford distributor. There'd been some supply issues certainly into North America with Ilford materials last year, and I'm guessing that's rectified now.
Yeah, I buy Ilford stuff all the time.
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't have a mom and pop place anywhere near me though. I mean, like not even hours away, close to me, so I have to, you know, order through B&H or Freestyle or Film Photography.
I just want to go to Blue Moon Cameras and Machine. That's where I want to
go.
Yeah,
I know. I do too. I'm planning on bringing a whole wad of cash because I know old Zeb's going to flip his eyes and little hearts come out of his eyes as he blinks.
You're not going to escape the grasp of Zeb Andrews with his slick sales technique, are you? You'll come out of there with one of those solid wood pinhole cameras, you know?
Yeah, those wood blocks.
You will.
Yeah. So, anyways. All right. Well,
I was going to ask something else. You've ruined my flow now. I've forgotten what it was.
Flow away, Andrew.
It was to do with meeting up with other... Oh, I know what it was. I was contacted on Messenger today by... Dom Silverthorn, yes, who makes his cameras, and he's in the UK. This is like a general shout out for Dom, really, and he's in the UK from early December till the end of December, and he was asking if we could meet up, and I said sure. I gave him a date. In fact, I gave him the date. Folks are listening, if anyone's listening, of Saturday the 8th of December. There is this photo walk in London that maybe a dozen of us are going on. And it's if you go to the website photowalk.me, which is a UK-based website, but anyone around the world, you know, it works the same way. But the guy who runs it is British. And it's a good way of organising photo walks, Nicole. And you know, if you want to reach out, he's very active on Twitter, photowalk.me. And you can register and organize your own photo walk and see if there's like-minded folks. But you know, for anyone who wants to come along on December the 8th, we're meeting in London and we're meeting in Carnaby Street, which is very, well, it used to be very trendy in the 1960s. I'm not sure what it is now.
Yeah. I do have somebody that I do share pinhole photography interest with. He lives on the other side of the state, 6.5 hours away, and his name is Pat McGroin.
Yep.
Underscore. Underscore.
Well, you've got how far away is Chapel Hill? Because you've got that young Turk,
Andre
Dominguez.
Chapel Hill for me is still 4.5 hours away.
Yeah.
And Andre is not as interesting in person as he is on the podcast. Just letting you guys know.
Well,
I'm just picking Andre. Andre knows I'm just joking. He's a great guy. I'm just joking. He's a great guy. Yeah, I wish I wasn't so far away so that I could, you know, have a little bit more time. It makes stuff much easier if it's only 45 minutes or an hour drive versus, you know, scheduling a day of traveling time, you know, into something. So yeah, it is what it is. But yeah, Andre's a great guy. I'm just joking, Andre.
Excellent.
Okay. Well, Nicole, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, man. It was, I was quite excited about this, you know. It's the first time I've actually had to, was able to actually talk about.
All right.
We'll get you back again, because we'll eventually run out of guests and start repeating ourselves.
Yeah.
I don't mind.
So what we'd like to do, Nicole, is if you'd like to let everybody know, all five of the people listening, where they can find your photography, and they can get in contact with you.
Yeah, my website is www.oneononeart.com. I'm also on Instagram, which is oneononeportraits. And I'm on Twitter as well. It's oneononeartportraits as well. And anyone can send me an email with any questions at info@oneononeart.com.
Yeah, all the information's on your website, isn't it? So
yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yeah. I welcome any questions.
Excuse me. Cool. Okay.
We'll edit that out, that cough. Yeah. It's fine.
Sorry, guys.
So we can, people who don't know where they can find Lensless podcast stuff, you can find us on Twitter at The Lensless. You can find us at The Lensless Podcast Facebook group. We're now up to 451 members. Shortly be 450, because...
excuse me.
As I say, we have a saying, it wasn't the cough that carried him off, it was the coffin they carried him off in.
Jeez, forever.
So it'll be like one of those American towns where the population was 450, and then someone goes along and crosses it out, and it'll be 449 as Corey succumbs to the lurgy. So we have a Facebook group, which is very interactive, and lots of really clever artistic people on there. And occasionally you'll see Corey as well. Corey doesn't do Twitter, so if you want to give him some abuse, it's at The Lensless on Twitter. And you follow. We'll finish quickly because Corey's dying.
Yeah. No, I'm okay.
Corey, you're on Instagram, aren't you, with The Lensless stuff now?
Yeah. Pino, find me at Pino Cannon.
Yep.
That's right. And Flickr?
Oh, yes. Flickr.
I haven't been to Flickr in so long, though, but...
I shared some 6x17 images from my large format camera from the roll film back, and I shared an image from the top of Mount Snowdon in Wales.
Snowdon?
And Flickr, if you want to share these things... Will you stop coughing?
I can't help it.
Just walk out of the room or something and come back when you're
sorry. I thought so I was over it.
When you've got a big image like that to share with folks, Instagram's rubbish, because I think there is a way of doing panoramics, but I'm too stupid to work it out.
No, it's just an app. They have an app you can use.
I tried that and it didn't seem to work because I'm just so dim. But Flickr, you can look at it in high resolution. I've got a big screen. And, you know, so I highly commend Flickr to folks out there. And we have a quite a well-supported group of nearly 100 folks on there. So you can check us out at our Flickr group, at Lensless Podcast. And
I'll get back there one day.
you'll mainly see me there. But our old mucker Mark, Three-Eyed Monster, is probably the top contributor.
Yeah.
On there.
James is on there too.
James Guerin is on there. Yeah. Lots of folks on there. Todd Schlemmer.
Yep.
Posts quite regularly, as do many, many others. And next week's guest, Michael Weitzman.
Yep.
I'll let you butcher that name next week.
No, I did Nicole Small this week. You have to do that one next week.
Yeah, well, you're not going to get that name wrong, are you? Nicole, it's been a real pleasure speaking to you.
Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Hope everybody has a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Bye, everybody. Right. Bye. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.
I think we must have had some of our guests must have been quite close to the border. weren't they, Corey? You're American, aren't you?
Up in
Washington State.
Washington State and.